Hello there, and welcome to a very special extra edition of the Awesome Comics Podcast. One that we don't really have that much to do with, do we, lads?
No.
Now, I'm Vince Hunt, creator of the Red Mask from Mars, and joining me, as always, is the wonderful creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And the man, the myth, the legend, the reprobate, Mr. Tony Esmond.
I still can't go over the bit where you went, hello there, like this. It was a little sort of slightly casual, a little bit camp. I liked it. Good though.
You know, I'm casual camp, that's what I am.
I'm so like far removed coffee. From so far removed from any of these recordings, it's unbelievable. My link's very tenuous. They're appearing on that.
We were thinking about you. I mentioned you.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. I'll listen to that then. I look forward to that.
You only listen to the stuff you mentioned in Notty Dan.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Everything else can fuck off.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's openly admitted before the show that he doesn't really listen when he's on it.
No. I've said I miss a lot of jokes, and upon re-listening, I pick up a lot of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Me too.
So Vince and Tony are 50% funnier than I think they are on the show.
Oh,
oh no, that's like 5% now.
Yeah. Oh dear. Yes. Anyway, folks, this is a convention special. We talked a little about it. We've got a couple of bits of audio for you. Now we've got a couple of panels from Nottingham Comic Con. Very excited. It's our first sort of panel audio, isn't it? We've got.
It is. Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
Although it didn't go particularly well. I'm going to say that. We did wonder, during it, you and I both looked at each other and went, what the fuck's going on? And then I wrote you a note that said, should we just go straight to audience questions? Yeah. This isn't going very well.
Yeah.
And you went, no, we have lots of questions to talk about. Okay,
And also, when I was on the panel, yes, there's an Awesome Pod panel. And when I was on it, I was holding the microphone to my face to talk. Tony gave me a look like I was doing something from another planet. But if you listen to the audio, I'm a lot clearer than him.
How are you? I've not listened to it yet.
Well, there you go. This episode.
Well, he had to turn my mic down, didn't he? Because he said I was too sexy. So didn't have to turn it down.
How can you turn down people's eyes, though?
You described it like a car crash, Vince.
Yeah.
Those moments before you realise you're in a crash.
Yeah.
I apologise in advance, but it did get better, I think.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And we were helped on our particular panel by the wonderful Emily Owen.
She was there. Awesome. Yeah.
Yes.
She made us laugh quite a lot.
Who you'll be hearing quite a bit of in this episode. This is the Emily Owen episode, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I'd like to apologise. I'm currently sitting in my car in a car park. Some man's flashing his headlights at him. I don't know I'm in his way. What's happening?
I think it's
that's the local sign at that car park.
Okay, I'll figure it out. If anyone knocks on the window, you might have to excuse me for a few minutes. Or maybe about 10 seconds.
Yeah. Tony's in the car park and me and Dan are in a public toilet. Different toilets. I just want to.
We're not weird.
I'm actually round someone else's house.
Are you?
Oh dear.
Yeah. I'm babysitting. So there you go.
Oh god.
Oh, is that like
different places?
Stop swearing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, yes. Yeah, so we've got some wonderful audio. Not only have we got the Awesome Pod panel, we've also got an extra panel that Tony took part in. Tell us a little bit about that, Tony.
Well, me and Alex, I talked about last week, Alex Martin, my panel pal, that's what I'm calling him. I took the turns. I did the first bits. I did the questioning on the first one. Then he did the audience. And we sort of swapped about. We did four in the end, but we only got two to show you this week. But it was a panel about the small press, and it was David White, Dan Berry, and Rachel Smith, all who were very good. All written a little chat beforehand. And I always give them the questions beforehand because it's easier that way, isn't it? Because they're just, I'm an other otherwise.
Yeah.
And then we ended up with a little bit of a comedy question, and then we had some questions from the audience, and they were all really good. Yeah, I really liked it.
Good, nice one.
Yes, and you know it's going to be good because we might as well put the audio in now, aren't we?
Okay.
So, so here you go, folks. Here's the first panel for your listening ears.
So on our panel today, we have Dave White from Avery Hill.
Hello.
Hello. Dan Berry.
Hi.
And Rachel Smith. Okay, so we're going to...
Hello.
Didn't know we were doing that.
It's going to be just a small press-centric first half an hour or so. Is going to be questions from me, with answers hopefully from them, that are a little bit more winded than yes or no. And then we'll hand it over to yourself. So everyone think of a question, because I'll be coming to everyone. There's only four of you. Not if you don't want it. Okay, so in the small press has sort of has ballooned up and has become a huge thing recently, isn't it? I think we're all aware of that. I was small pressing in the 90s, and there was probably five or six people at Bristol who would appear, and you'd always see the same faces. It was the 2000 AD, you know, there was always the 2000 AD magazine-ish and all this sort of thing. Anyway, so it's ballooned up now. So the first question to the panel, I'll start with you, Dave. So creating comics yourself, which is what you guys do, is no mean feat. What made you start doing it?
I mean, it all starts, and I guess it's the same for everyone, with a lifelong love of comics. Okay. You know, starting with Bingo Dandy, Wizard, Chips, the Bees, etc., going up through, you know, things like Roy the Rovers and licensed stuff like Transformers, and then 2000 AD, and then I think I found him in a newsagent's a copy of Uncanny X-Men 247, I think. Ooh, it was the first one I bought. Yeah. So and just building through that. Then after kind of Image lost the first kind of wave of Image, kind of ran out of steam, I actually kind of went away from comics for a while, and then got back into it around, I think it was Civil War, the first Marvel Civil
was
War.
Was that 2000, around about then?
Probably around then. Yeah. And it was just going back into comic shops and starting to see stuff that wasn't kind of the big companies, and starting to see self-published stuff and small press stuff. And it really just opened my eyes to what's out there and you know, the amount of incredible creators that are making their own stuff. Around the same time, I started making a zine as well.
Okay.
And self-publishing that with some friends, and kind of the conjunction of making stuff ourselves, finding other stuff by other people, meeting people through that, you know, kind of finding out, just dropping them an email saying, you know, really love your work and stuff, and it just kind of snowballed from there. You start to meet, you know, the kind of people that are in that community, and it's, I hope the guys would say the same, but it's an incredibly supportive and close-knit community. Yeah. And then coupled with the realisation it's actually really easy to get stuff out with the software that's available now, that you can just, you know, download it and do it all yourself. Publishing, printing's never been cheaper if you find the right printer. I think bringing all those things together and realising the amazing talent that's out there, the fact that it's not that difficult to actually produce physical copies of work, underpinned by just the love of comics as a medium, it just kind of snowballed, and we started meeting more people, started putting more work out. It was working. Right. People liked it, and we've just carried on from there.
Cool. Yeah, definitely. So, Dan, you started in what, 1973, making small press. Was it around that time?
Around that time, yeah.
So he didn't. That's a lie.
No, that's not true at all.
How did you get started, mate? How did it start?
I mean, I think, you know, similarly to Dave, I when I was a kid, I'd read the Beano and the Dandy. My big brother Tim would read the Beano, and I'd read the Dandy. Obviously, I mean, that's just
baseline.
It's just common knowledge. That's just the way it is. If you've got a character called Dan on the front cover, the kid called Dan, that's his comic. So that was my comic. That was it.
We need more Jordan-related comics now, don't we?
Yeah, we do. And we and so, you know, we were always really interested in Asterix and Tintin. My mum had worked for a time in Belgium, so she came back from Belgium when she was pregnant, I think, with my older brother, with a bunch of these European children's books. And they were all in French, and I couldn't understand a word of them, but I really liked looking at the pictures, and we got into Tintin and Asterix from there. And then when I became a teenager and was way too cool for anything else, I had a bunch of friends that were into comics, and they had this book that said how much everything was worth. And I remember feeling like comics at that point was a closed door to me, because you couldn't jump into this arc of X-Men at any one point. You needed to know so many things before you could get into the story. So I fell out of comics. You know, I was in bands and all sorts for a time. It was music was the thing that I did for a long time. We used to make videos for the bands that we were in and for other bands as well. And so I got really interested in like the storytelling side of, you know, video making. So I wanted to make films, wanted to tell stories with film. And then realized that when you do that, you've got so many other people to try and coordinate. It's like a big bag of ferrets, really difficult to wrestle. And so I kind of came back into drawing, because I was always quite good at drawing. And so I was drawing what I didn't really know what they were, but now I'd call them mini comics. And what I would do, because I didn't really, again, that the comic industry was a closed door. You know, if you go into a comic shop, you didn't know what you were looking at, and I didn't feel like I could find a way in. So the place that sold the books that I liked was Waterstones. And so I'd take these little mini comics and I'd slide them into the books that I liked in Waterstones, because I didn't know any better at all. I didn't realize that there was an industry, certainly a small press industry. So I think in around...
Did you ever get any feedback from that? Did you ever, I know you've told me about this before. Did you ever get anyone say...
Yeah. Okay. It was friends of mine who I said, oh, you've got to read this book, it's great. And they go and buy it. And they're like, did you go and put some stuff in these books? I was like, ah, God, it wasn't for you. It was for the Jonathan
proper
Cape.
Public.
Yeah. Jonathan Cape himself was going to come in and publish me. Idiots.
Put it back.
Put it back. Go and put it back in your favourite book now. So I was kind of young and naive, and then I just kind of haven't stopped. Basically, that seems to be it. Longevity in comics seems to be all based on not stopping doing it.
Cool. What about you, Rachel? You're clearly the youngest person on the panel. How did you get started? What made you get started?
a little bit similar to Dan, I think. I kind of, I liked comics as a kid and then sort of, I didn't read them as a teenager. My first comic I got into was Sonic the Comic,
right.
Which I believe Lou Stringer worked on
for a
time. Yeah, it's a shame that he's not.
He's cancelled today,
he's not
here,
yeah.
A lot of people have worked on Sonic.
Oh, really? Yeah. I remember being so excited for those comics coming out. And I remember as a kid getting them on the way home from school and then walking home with my dad. And by the time I got home, I was like shaking. I was so excited to read this comic. So, so I knew that they were that they were great. And then I think I had some kind of prejudices about comics as I got older. I just thought they were superheroes. And those kind of stories don't really turn me on at all. I'm just and then when Scott Pilgrim came out, the penny sort of dropped there, and I was like, oh, you could just tell any story with these. It's fine. It's just another way of telling a story. And then I kind of got back into comics after that. And a little bit, it kind of felt like a closed door to me as well, because I thought it was just kind of Marvel and DC and Oni, and they were all sort of, you know, I had no idea how to talk to these people. And then I had a few friends that were into comics as well, and they were like, well, you can just do it yourself. You can just, like, draw a comic and then get the local printers around the corner to print it. And I was like, whoa, okay. So I did, and Dad, I've just not stopped since really? I did that.
Well, that leads into my next question, which I don't know if you wanted to continue on this, Rachel, but...
Sure.
Who did you go to? So you had some friends who gave you some advice. Mm. Is there anyone you looked to, you thought, oh, I like what they're doing, or I like what he's doing, I'll emulate them, or I'll get some advice from them? Was anyone like that for you?
John Allison was a huge... Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to...
Giant Days.
I'd second that as well.
Okay.
John was a huge pile of knowledge that he let me rummage around in.
Oh, good, okay.
Yeah, still does.
Right, okay.
He's great. If you don't love John Allison, you're an idiot.
Anyone with Giant Days? Anyone? Yeah.
Scary Go Round, Bobbins, Bad Machinery. The list goes on.
And he's been about for a while. People forget how he's actually been about for well over a decade in the small press.
Oh, he started webcomics in like 95.
Oh, okay.
I think he was one of the first British people to make a full-time living off the back of webcomics.
Really? I never realised that. Okay.
Yeah. So he's huge in the States.
Yeah.
Huge. Mm.
Yeah. He's he just won an award or just been nominated for one, I think, isn't he?
Giant Days was nominated for an Eisner.
Eisner, that's right.
Yeah.
So was mine.
Just saying.
Now, Dave, as a publisher / editor, we've talked about this before on the podcast we've got, because you've got a specific person you look to for your style of editing, didn't you? It was the record producer guy.
Yeah, that's right. See, it's Anthony Wilson.
Yeah,
who ran Factory Records in Manchester and worked with Joy Division and New Order and so on. And they had a really, it was just all about the creators and less as an editing style perhaps, because we still work closely with our creators as needed.
With your people, you know,
try not to.
No contracts, you know, in blood.
We've not gone there yet. But more the approach to working with creators you trust to just make the books that they want to make. So that kind of is the ethos that underpins how we try and approach our output. Probably from a kind of gaining knowledge point of view, ours is probably slightly different in that we're working with creators. We're probably going through that process already.
Yeah.
For us, it was about actually producing the books we wanted to the quality and standard we wanted to make. We tried a few different printers, and some are quite helpful, some aren't so helpful, and it's a bit of trial and error. But we do a lot of work with a guy called Rich Hardiman now, who runs a company called Comic Print in UK, does a huge amount of books, probably a good amount that's out there today. And he was incredibly helpful in educating me in how to prepare the print files and how to put everything together so that we're going to get the output that we wanted, because that's a big part of our role in the process. We ask our creators to trust us in putting their work out in the best way possible.
Rich has spoken very highly of. I mean, is anyone, really, anyone in the audience printed a book with Rich at all? Or no, he's very popular among small press at the moment, and he really does know what he's doing, doesn't he?
And he does, and he knows that. I mean, that's part of the service you're getting with Rich, and he did it in a really helpful way as well. It was, you know, next time try and do this, and this will help. And it's just that accumulation of knowledge. So probably a little bit different. It was around the technical aspects that we needed to get a bit more.
Okay.
And then as we've gone on and met more people, talking to, you know, publishers like Self Made Hero and Myriad and so on, they're all really helpful as well. It's all really supportive, and just finding our way as we go.
Yeah, I'm going to say it's not a dog-eat-dog game at the moment, is it?
We don't see it,
yeah. As a reviewer, I don't see it, certainly. Okay, so you've made your book. You've got it ready. It's in you're filling up your hallway at home in boxes. How do you feel about sending it out to people to get their opinion? Rachel, do you want to start on that one?
This is something that a lot of creators get really nervous about. I actually worked in PR before I started doing comics, so I was like on it with that. I looked at who was reviewing what. I looked at creators that I thought were similar to me and saw who had reviewed them and, picked up all that on the internet and then made a list and just sent. I sent like hard copies of the book where I could, but if I didn't have an address, then I'd send a PDF.
Okay.
There's no point making something and then just sitting on it. You've got to, and getting reviews and previews and stuff like that is the best way.
I mean, do you have a policy around there's certain people you trust their opinion? But the problem with making a comic is your last 10 people, they'll all give you a different opinion, won't they?
Sure.
You know, do you have like a little series of people, even before the review copies go out, do you go to people and say, I mean, I know your partner Adam's a comic maker. Do you go to him? Do you trust him?
Oh, to sort of tell me if I've made a rubbish thing. I have a few friends that I kind of bounce ideas off, like through the whole process as well. And Ricky and Dave, when I was doing the books with them, I always send the script and trust their opinion and as editors. But my self-published stuff is probably just me and Adam.
Okay.
And maybe
that's
my
enough,
mum,
isn't it?
If she's got time.
Yeah, my cat's got a low opinion. What about you, Dan? So you've got that book prepared. What's the next step for you? Finished it? Do you send books out to review sites, or do you?
Generally not. I did to begin with. I'd send, you know, because I'm very proud of the, you know, the quality of the production I do with the books that I do. I think when I started and nobody knew who I was, I was very desperate for everyone to see and everyone, you know, please, 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 look at me, look at me, look at me. But I think that there's something very British about feeling that that's distasteful.
Yeah.
That whole...
We don't talk about money in Britain, do we? And that sort of thing, I think, is similar.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, working freelance, you end up being quite comfortable talking about it because you need that money. You've got to get it. I'm really happy if I make lots of money. I'd like more. If anyone wants to buy my books, please do.
Yeah.
We'd love that. The way I approached kind of marketing myself and the work that I do, I'm really happy chatting to people. I like talking. I was asked to run some panels in a show in Birmingham in 2012, and that then sort of evolved into the podcast I do called Make It Then Tell Everybody.
Very good podcast, yeah.
Thank you very much. Thank you. And it wasn't the intention at the time, but the way that it's kind of evolved is I'll be able to get in touch with my heroes, like from, you know, the people who would inspire me very early on and say, do you fancy chatting to me for about an hour or so? And then all of those people whose work I really love, all of their fans then listen to that and then, you know, get to listen to me talking for an hour as well.
Right.
And so I'm basically being dragged along by other people's coattails, I think.
Oh, okay. It's interesting.
It
doesn't come across that way, I've got to say.
It's a thing that's gained momentum, and it's a side effect of the podcast. Very, very welcome side effect as well, because I spent hours talking to my heroes. It's great. Just rummaging around inside their brains. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. So it's been very, very useful for me, kind of getting a masterclass each week from these giants. But also then that sort of associated... I don't want to use the marketing word, but it's kind of associated marketing then.
Okay, like, right, okay.
I get sort of tarred with the same brush.
Yeah, I get
a very lovely brush.
Yeah, we're judged by the company we keep, aren't we?
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
That's the wrong line with Alex, to be fair. Now, Dave, you've recently, or probably just over a year ago, taken on a marketing officer, haven't you? Why did you come to that decision, and how did you approach it?
Originally, I'd set up Avery Hill with a real old friend of mine, Ricky Miller, and we were doing it ourselves, and we've got day jobs, and we were doing everything around it, probably the growth that we could see and the interest in the books and the creators we were working with and so on was outpacing our ability and our time to put to it. In a way we wanted to, and a big part of what, again, another one of our commitments to our creators is we take that kind of PR stuff off their hands to a certain extent. It only really works if everyone's involved, but that kind of, you know, Britishness of talking yourself up and telling everyone you're great, it can be difficult to keep up all the time. It's a lot easier to get someone else to do that on your behalf, and so that's something we do.
I don't know, some people pull it off.
Some people are great. it's massively important. So there's a relatively small number of reviewers and dedicated sites that will work with small press in the UK, or extremely hard work. You know, obviously Tony, you do some, and people like Andy Oliver at Broken Frontier and Richard Bruton at Forbidden Planet International, all doing huge amounts of hard work, but still haven't got that critical mass, and we.
Yeah.
We wanted to start getting into the States because that's a massive market, and you can really start to, if you can hit that and get success there, it's exponentially far and away above what we get in the UK. So we needed to put some more time to that, and we couldn't do it ourselves, and we felt we were letting our creators down if we weren't doing it properly. So we brought someone in, Kat Chapman, to handle that for us.
Can I just say she's very good?
She is Kat's, very good, yeah.
Yeah, she's incredible, yeah. So... We kind of sat down and thought about who would be able to do that role in a way we wanted to, and B, who we'd be happy to work with. And we kind of both wrote a pretty short list each, and Kat was at the top of both of them. So,
and she's also a very accomplished creator herself.
She's an incredible creator, yeah. She really is. She's a wonderful artist and writer. Kat Zine is her current self-published project, and I'd encourage you all to look at it. It's really the expansion and keeping pace with what we needed to do and what we needed to do to fulfil our commitments to our creators, and also, you know, take advantage of what we could do as a business and the way we grow.
I mean, we often call it the Avery Hill model on if anyone listens to the podcast I'm on, which he, now let me see if it's true. Meet a creator, take him to the pub, talk him into making a book, release a book. That's kind of the scale that he goes.
I reckon that's probably about 80% of the books.
Brilliant, good.
And there is a reason for that. Is
you got to like the people you work with, haven't you? Yeah.
It helps.
Yeah, definitely.
It certainly helps. So that we need to build a relationship as we edit the books as well.
Yeah.
You need to build that relationship to make sure that process is going to be as healthy and fruitful as possible. Go out, have a shandy and see what we can do.
Okay, well, one more question before we open it up to the audience. So if anyone's got a question, what, let's start with you, Dave, then. What keeps you going? What keeps you going? Because you've been going, 2, 3, 4 years now?
Yeah, probably approaching 4 years in degrees of size. You get kind of the down points in when you're working on a project before you put it out, and no one sees what's going on in that time. It's all kind of behind the scenes, but we're getting pages and pages of incredible work from our creators during that time. So just getting those emails and just seeing that work come in is incredibly energising, because and also knowing, you know, where it's going and how incredible it's going to be, and then you launch the book, and you know that's exciting as well. So it's kind of these phases of the book's life, and probably the overarching all of it is just working with incredibly talented people.
Yeah.
And finding new people to work with, and working with people we've worked with before on new projects.
And that's a sort of buzz to it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. And again, we'll only put a book out that we'd love to read ourselves.
Yeah.
All the time we're working on a book, we're working on a project that we love. So, that makes it really easy to keep going.
Brilliant. What about you, Dan? What keeps you going, mate? Because you've got an awful lot of product out there, haven't you?
Yeah, I do. Well, I'm a restless child.
Right, okay.
I don't like not doing anything. I don't know what normal people do with their time.
Right.
Like, I have zero idea what normal people do. When they go home and into their houses, I don't know what happens if you don't spend all evening drawing.
Right,
or,
okay.
You know, working on the computer or designing something, or I have no idea. I can't stop. I think the thing that, you know, that motivated me to start was I really liked drawing, and I really liked, you know, the people, you know, in the industry as well, and I still do. That keeps me going. I get a great deal of personal pleasure. This is going to sound a little bit grubby, maybe. I get a great deal of personal pleasure from drawing. It's a really fun thing to do. If you've got a pen and a piece of paper, you're just never bored. And if you're easily bored, like I am, like, it's fine. I haven't been bored in years.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
And it's a cheap game as well, if you just want to draw, isn't it? You
know? Gosh, yeah. Yeah. But it's you know, my day job is teaching comics as well. I run a degree course in Wrexham in North Wales, where we teach comics and children's books. And if I'm not able to do that job, then I shouldn't be allowed to teach it.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
And I think that if I ever sort of fall out of actually creating things, then I should probably not do that job anymore, because, you know, what integrity do I have if I can't do it myself? You know, so that's a motivator. It's not the only one, but the ability to, you know, travel all around the planet and, you know, meet really interesting people. It's a charmed life.
And absolutely. Rachel, definitely. Yeah. And Rachel, you put quite a few books out recently. You're more than one a year at the moment, aren't you? Definitely. Is that right?
At the minute, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So what keeps you going? Is it encouragement, or do you pay attention to reviews, for example, or something?
Oh yeah. And the getting a nice review is always really, really nice. I guess the fans, I suppose.
Okay.
What keeps me going.
That's a good answer, yeah.
I did a show in Canada with Dan as well, and Avery Hill, all of us.
We were all in Canada. We were all there. I think we were on the same plane.
Yes, we were. Yeah.
David's in first class. You probably didn't see him.
Yeah,
we
didn't.
That's where I'm back.
That's working.
And I had what is possibly my career highlight.
All right.
Yeah, a little girl bought a copy of The Rabbit, and I had lots of books kind of in front of me, I always sketch in the books if people want me to, but because I had books in front of me, she couldn't see me, and she was also quite little, so she couldn't watch me draw. And I gave the book to her, and her mum paid me, and I saw her open the book and see the drawing, and just her face, she was so excited that I'd drawn, and she was just like, and then she went to show her mum, and her mum's like, oh yeah, that's great, oh that's brilliant. Great. And then she closed the book and she hugged it. And I was just like, and I was a little bit hungover. And I was like, I nearly cried, like in front of this little girl. I was just like, so that's like, it's, that's why I make comics.
Yeah, exactly.
Like there's always guys with like loads of Doctor Who issues that they want me to just sign, and I'll sign like 20 of them. And I'm always pleased to see those guys, but they're not who I make comics for. I make comics for that little girl.
That's a great answer, yeah. Okay, so has anyone in the audience got a question? Oh, Nick in the back. Sorry, I don't know you, sir, in the back. Yeah, not planted. Hi.
Hi.
So, Dan, welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah, hopefully.
You hear a lot of people talk about the small press community. What does that mean to you?
Can I jump in on that one? I think when I started the podcast, I was really worried that it would be 30 episodes and then done. Because, I think at the time that I started, it felt small. And so the more people I've interviewed, the more I've realised that that little community that I started with is like an island in an ocean, and every other person has like this link or this bridge to another island, and so then you find that you're going exploring, you're like, holy cow, there's a whole continent of people over here. And so I think the podcast is up to like 130 something episodes, and I've interviewed 150 something people, and the more I do, the bigger I realise it is. And I think small press is kind of a diminutive term for it. I would want to call it independent publishing, because that's what we do, I think. But I find that the more I do, the more there is to do. It's this infinite feast in a bottomless pit. That sounds quite negative, but you get the idea. It's
still getting my head around it. Yeah.
But it's really, really lovely. And then I don't like saying the word networking, because it's not networking, it's genuine friendships with people you genuinely like, and you can be cynical and call it networking and tapping into other people's target markets and blah, blah, blah. But it's genuinely a very friendly place, I think. It's very nice.
We're almost out of time.
Sorry, I just completely.
No.
Did you want to say something, Dave? Did you want to say something?
No, I've done. No,
that was, you have a Patreon for making them tell everyone.
Yes, I do actually. Yes, thank you. Thank you for bringing that up. You have a Patreon too, don't you?
I do. Yes.
Oh, I think people should probably sign up for both. Maybe. Don't know. Do you have a Patreon?
I will be after this.
Okay, we'll coming soon. You heard it here first, folks.
Okay, so we've got just a couple more minutes left, so I'm just going to ask them one fun question, because they have been fun so far, let's face it. So you get to recreate a Marvel or DC character in your own style, your own, let's call it indie style. Who do you do? Dave?
From a publishing point of view, it would be the New Mutants.
Oh, okay. Bob McLeod or Sienkiewicz?
Straight away, yeah. So probably that first kind of 30 to 40 issues. The reason for that, I don't know if that's me, is that's the first title I've really got into and managed to, kind of get number one and work. And I think I completed the run in the end. And that was the first group of characters that I really connected with, kind of younger characters. And I know some kind of cropped up in recent titles.
Yeah,
kind
of Avengers.
But that was just a really, really... That group of characters means something to me, so I'd like to bring that back together.
Yeah, the little nice little family. There was no spin-offs. It ran 100 issues and stopped. It was a nice little title, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it lost its way towards the end with the
Liefeld
stuff. Yeah, but that early run, especially the Sienkiewicz stuff, is just incredible.
Cool, Dan.
I think every time a new Spider-Man film comes out, it has to revisit the origin story of Spider-Man over and over and over again. So I'd like to do that. There seems to be a lot of money in revisiting the Spider-Man origin story. So I'd do that.
Okay. The origin of Dan Berry again.
Over and over and over and over.
Rachel?
I'd like to work on Squirrel Girl.
I know, and I've seen your work on Squirrel Girl, and it's brilliant. You should be working on Squirrel Girl. Yeah. If everyone pops by Rachel's table, she might give you a little teaser of some Squirrel Girl art with you, or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I can find it on my phone, yeah.
Good. Okay, brilliant. Thanks, guys. I hope everyone's enjoyed that. A little round of applause for Dave, Dan, and Rachel.
Well, that was lovely. Well done, Tony.
We just listened to it. We didn't just listen to it. We're recording all this at once.
I've listened to it far more than you could possibly imagine.
Have you? Okay. I've listened to it, yeah. I remember saying some weird stuff. I think I said to Rachel Smith, "You're the youngest person on the panel," and she's looked at me, and I thought, that sounds weird. I said something sarcastic to Dave, because Dave always laughs at things I say. Yeah. It was all right. I think it went all right. I think Kev texted me back today saying he liked him, so I was pleased.
Yeah.
I don't think I swore too much. I swear in the next one, don't I?
Yes, you do. The awesome pod panel featuring myself, Tony Esmond, Dr. Alex Martin was helping us out again. And why did I call him doctor?
He is a doctor. How did you know that? He's a professor. There was kids in the audience. Yeah, well, not kids. There was like they're older than
youngins.
Two.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. They're older than 2-year-old kids have all heard the word fuck, haven't they? Let's face it.
Tony didn't say it loudly. Yeah, Tony was the only one that swore. So
unfortunately, the microphone picked it up and amplified it.
That's what microphones do, and I didn't realise.
Yes. So here's the panel where Tony Esmond struggles with the microphone for 30 minutes. So enjoy yourself, folks. Enjoy.
There you go.
Hey.
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 We have a winner. For those who aren't aware, on the Twitter we put out a competition to our listeners. If anyone shouted the word pork pie before we started, they win a prize. So.
Which is a Mark Lamming.
It's a Mark Lamming print.
Available for sale at his table.
Yeah. Mark is a lovely chap. Anyway, hi and welcome to this special edition of the Awesome Comics Podcast, coming direct from Nottingham Comic Con 2016. Hey, it's brilliant. This audience make it sound like there's lots of people in here. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Miles and Stalkerville, and joining me to talk about the wondrous world of small press comics are the mind behind Pup and Grumpicorn, of which you can see in the official New York? It's because I'm thinking about my holiday. Nottingham Comic Con comic book this very day, and is also a fervent supporter of indie comics, Emily Owen.
Hello. I'm not Dan Butcher.
Writer, Down the Tubes contributor, and the owner of the luscious head of hair known as the Golden Waterfall, Mr. Tony Esmond.
Thank you.
Yes. And helping us today. This is basically the Awesome Comics Panto, isn't it? Is that what this is? Yeah.
Oh, no, it isn't.
Here we go. Right. And helping us today is with the live questions, which we're going to see what the audience wants to ask us, which should be interesting, is Mr. Alex Martin over there. Say hello. Give him a round of applause. He's been here all day. Yeah. For those of you out there who don't know, the Awesome Comics Podcast is a show that focuses on small press and indie comics. It's not just about the books that we like, but also about the whole crazy world of making and publishing your own work. I see people in here that actually make comics, so they know about the stress of it and the ups and downs and general delights of it. Maybe some of you out there thought about picking up something different from the big two that are in your pull list every week, or even decided you finally want to bite the bullet and make your own comics yourself. Hopefully, that's why you're here, not because you took a wrong turn on the way to the loo. Hopefully, that's not the case. So let us spend the next few wonderful moments telling you what's so awesome about small press in every possible angle. So to start us off, I'm just going to ask, I was going to say this lovely group of people, but I've also got Tony here. What is it about small press and indie comics that you find so awesome? Emily?
Thanks.
I thought you were going to sing to me then.
No, that's not happening. Right, well, so for me, it's small press allows you to do whatever you want to do, especially with things like Kickstarter now. You can make the comics you want, get them out there to people in their hands, actual real comics, quite easily. I mean, there's a lot of work, but in theory, easily. The other thing that's great is the community that's behind it. It's the most supportive community, professional community that I know of.
Were you a big reader of...
No. I don't read any Big Two comics.
No, but were you very much a reader of like small press and independent comics before you decided to jump in with your
yes.
own stuff?
So I've been involved in the small press area for about 4 years now. Mm-hmm. And I've worked on average 6 cons a year behind a table in those 4 years. It's exhausting.
The hysterical laughter.
Yes. And I have a normal full-time job as well, so that's my weekends on top of working normal hours. And so, yeah, before then, didn't really get involved with anything. So it gave me an in to divert my creativity.
It's made you the person you are now.
Yeah, you can seem quite diverting.
Yes. So yeah, I got involved with it, and then so many opportunities have come up. So not only I write Pop and Grumpcorn, which is amazing, obviously. I do reviews for Down the Tubes. I do promotions for a couple of people that I shouldn't probably mention that I do promotions for, but I do promotions as well. So it's given me so many opportunities to do so many different things, as well as just sitting behind a table and selling comics.
It is very much like once you dip your toe into it, it's sort of like
sucks you in,
it
like
just completely
vortex.
Sucks you under, doesn't it? As soon as you start like publishing your own comics, that's it. You're done then, aren't you?
Yeah.
Just give up.
I think it's fair to say you met your fiance through comics,
I
didn't
did.
You?
I met him.
It's
at
a lovely story, isn't it?
It's a romantic.
It is romantic.
Yeah, our eyes met across a crowded convention hall, and thanks to Jim Bamford. Wave, Jim. Hello.
It's really good for an audio show having someone wave.
Yeah, yeah. Nobody cares.
Shout from the back, Jim.
Well, no, I'll just make.
There we go.
It is true. Yeah. We actually met in the British Library, actually.
We met on a dating app. I can't really say it for Yeah, it was.
Yeah, and now look at us.
So, yes, you can meet people.
Is this that really?
Are you talking about dating apps or are you talking about comics?
No, cons. At cons, you can meet romantic
interests.
Something
we asked about on the podcast recently, didn't we? About whether you could fall in love at a convention.
That's not a topic for this. Convention.
Yeah. Actually, never mind the format. What about love? Let's talk about love.
Yeah.
Okay, so a sense of community is something you're saying then, Emily, yeah?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
What about create? Oh, God.
Sorry.
I can't stop swearing. I don't know what's happening.
I know. Why did you wait until our panel to do this? To just completely fall apart?
What's happened to the noise? What about creative content? So that's, as a small presser, you're allowed to... You can basically write and choose to write whatever you like, whether it be edgy, romantic, horror. You can choose whatever you like, and you don't have the constraints of a big publisher. Do you find that, Vince? Or?
Well, I mean, I love the fact that just when you do indie comics anyway, you can do whatever you want. There's no budget. There's no one telling you what to do. You can literally...
It's definitely no budget.
It's completely apart from the printing budget, of course. But it's a blank canvas. You can do whatever you want, and that's the first stage of it. You know, the world. I mean, I could have done what I didn't know anyone from the small press community when I started making comics. I sound like I lived under the stairs or something, don't I? But
it lives in the countryside.
Yes, I've seen the colour green, Tony, don't be jealous. I was in my own little world just creating these comics, and I could do whatever I wanted, and I chose to do someone with an alien on their face smashing big monsters. But that's the kind of guy I am. But
and
it wasn't...
Sharks.
Yeah. And giant shark monsters that are a nightmare to draw. But then it was when I actually started like my first convention that the world then completely opened up. And it becomes, I think, small press and independent comics. I learned from day one of the first show, I learned 1,000% more. And I met some wonderful people. And then I eventually decided to start a podcast about it. And my life's gone downhill from there, hasn't it, really?
You met wonderful people and then you chose Tony.
And then I decided to have Tony Esmond on the show.
Yeah, very fortunate day.
Yeah. What? No, we're not going to do that yet, Tony. I want to put the focus on you, Tony. You've been making and writing about comics for quite some time. You don't like it when the focus is on you, do you? I love this. But what is it about you? Because you also read like Marvel.
I personally don't see a distinction between any form of comics. I enjoy them all. You know, and when we talk about them all, whilst we're a small press orientated podcast, I read the big, well, it's the big three now, I suppose. And I read all forms of comics. I don't think you should differentiate. I think there's a lot of people in the small press. We're just talking to Rachel Smith, if anyone came to that panel. Rachel Smith has recently pitched for Squirrel Girl, and I think she'd be an excellent choice for it, for example. And that's a 30,000 selling, you know, mainstream comic book. And I think you have to see that. I think you've got to see, if you're in the small press, you've got to see an avenue that, you know, you may well step out of the small press. I mean, I can, for example, I'm always saying to Vince, the Red Mask from Mars could easily be a Saturday morning cartoon. Yeah, and these options do appear to you, but they appear to you in the realm of your character is completely owned by yourself. And I think that's a very important thing these days. Even I was chatting to a guy who went to the DC Diamond Summit yesterday, and he was saying that there's an awful lot of buzz at the moment about creator-owned comics. And even amongst DC, so DC, which has Vertigo, obviously, which is creator-owned, but even certain DC products now, certain DC characters are being considered as creator-owned. And whilst the legal terms are not quite in place yet, the approach to the storytelling and the creators who are doing it is being approached in that way now, if you see what I mean. Do you think that's a relevant? Do you think that's
I think, yeah.
Yeah. We've had a couple of pros now around small press. I'd like a sort of pros and cons. So a couple of cons. Crippling anxiety. Anyone who's created their own comic has suffered from crippling anxiety, Vincent?
Or continues to do so. Well, actually, I mean, all jokes aside, even the creators that are like super, you know, you think are just running through this publishing world, just breaking down doors and being huge successful. They're probably a lot. They do suffer. There's a lot of them that suffer from anxiety, isn't there? And there's certainly and I've noticed that there's a lot more books, like published books, actually focused about anxiety. I know Rachel Smith herself has just released a new book. Is that out now?
I know it comes out of Thought Bubble.
Thought Bubble. Yeah. You know, and she, you know, the future's just huge for her. And I think it's wonderful that comics also gives you that avenue, you know, especially with independent publishing. You've got that avenue to tell your story, and to, it is therapy. It can be therapy at the same time, isn't it?
Mm. Has anyone in the audience created their own comic? Hands up. Yeah, a couple. Jen, did you put your hand up there, please? Thank you. So is anyone thinking about creating their own? I know we had a chat, didn't we, earlier? Yeah, okay. Right. And it's something you can do a lot easier now. I started small pressing in probably the early 90s, and it was mostly UCAC and then Bristol. Bristol was the same five faces in the same hall constantly over and over again, and we'd each buy each other's comic, and that would be the only sale you'd get for the whole weekend. Mm. And then we used to go get drunk. That was essentially the whole of Bristol. The world is just...
Nothing's changed.
No, pretty well, the drunken bits, yes. Yeah. The drunken bits, says that. The world is now sort of ballooned outwards, and I think... small press now is seen as almost these days. I lecture to a university course in Staffordshire, and it's seen almost as a career
name dropper.
Choice. Sorry,
just dropping names everywhere.
It's seen almost as a career choice now. So people think of the small press. People are now doing it. They're giving up their day job, and they are doing the small press because with Kickstarter and Patreon and all the conventions that are running, we're friends with them. Mike Garley, I don't think he'll mind saying that he's recently given up his day job because he finds that he's making more money through MCMs, events like this, and online selling his comic. And I think it certainly is an area that is the biggest it's ever been, small press now. Mm. And I think if you're going to approach it, you really need to understand every finer point of it. And I think the crippling self-doubt certainly is something we see. If anyone's got a Twitter account and they follow people who are small pressers on, somebody's going to have a meltdown at some point during the daytime, let's face it.
Or the Facebook posts, you know, they go beyond the 140 characters, don't they?
Yeah. We've had a few. We get the odd confessional email into the podcast.
We do. Yeah. I don't know why people email us, as, you know, like we're therapists.
Yeah.
If they've heard the show, they know that we're just an absolute mess.
If you email into the podcast with something, you know, some kind of sort of therapy issue, just know that what we'll do is we'll have a little laugh about it, and then we'll probably tell all our friends. They'll tell their friends, so everyone will end up knowing. Mm. So it's out there. It's out there in the open. Yeah. And I think that's a good way to deal with
it. It's a good way to bring it. We are bringing the community together in that way, aren't we?
So.
You know, just massive trolling. Small
community, so everybody
will know. Yeah.
We're coming across like a gang of bullies.
I like that.
Yeah, it's quite cool, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, I think there's...
Do you have to be a better quality to be noticed?
God, the quality...
I'm
the quality's really gone. Stick figure drawings. Yeah, you could do.
Yeah.
Well, you know how I draw round things? You know I draw round things and make comics out of them? Yeah.
It's more of an animation, though, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, it's more, yeah. Like a flip book. But no, I think the... I think comics have definitely really improved. I have to say, the quality of small press, and certainly there's guys in the room doing it, has absolutely gone out. You know, I mean, I remember some of the trash you used to see, like the photocopied rubbish, badly spelt, you know.
But that's not to say that hasn't gone away.
No, there's a little bit. So, I mean, yeah, people need to know how to spell your, I've got to be honest with you. And it's not you are, you know, look in a dictionary.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely, I think the small press has really improved. But I think it's also improved in line with the fact that now people can start as webcomics, and they can move from a webcomic, they can move to a print-on-demand service through the internet, and they can produce their comics like that. Where when I started, you had to have a friend who like would literally cut out balloons and glue them to a page, and then take them to... I used to go to Catford. Anyone know Catford? Yeah. Catford Print, you know, the Black Cat Centre in Catford, and tried to explain to some dullard what a comic was. You know, and that was where it was. But these days, you don't even have to speak to... I love the
fact... You're a real people person.
I am, yeah. I love the fact... I'm just about to get to that. I love the fact you don't have to speak to anyone. You've got a comic ready to sell. You know what I mean? You can sell it on the internet, or you can come to one of these conventions and watch people not try
would
and make eye contact with you.
I recommend you speak to people, though, and get advice before you print your comic.
Yeah, I think so.
There are specialist printers as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who's the guy, the friend of yours, who does it?
Rich Hardiman from Comic Printing
Comic
UK,
yeah.
Who is... not only a great printer, he does all of Avery Hill's books, and you've seen the quality of those, they're amazing, but he knows his industry inside out. So if you need advice about what printing, what paper, what format it should be in for the best book that you can, for the page size that you have, someone like him is invaluable. He also will fix your bleeds and everything if you mess up your page layout.
It's not a literal thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's one of the things...
I sound like I know what I'm talking about, but he'll fix your bleeds and everything. And so someone like him who will make sure that the product you get is the best it can be is invaluable.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, we do constantly say it on the show anyway. We get guests from all kinds, like, you know, from all over the world to get their sort of experiences in making comics. And we always say it that it's... research it, you know. I mean, just making the comics one thing. And then once you've got the comic, that's wonderful. But if you want to get it out to the wider world, then you really have to be informed, and you have to be prepared to sell it. You've got to be at conventions. Don't be if you're someone that doesn't like talking to people, don't go to convention.
Really? You didn't mention this before.
Well, okay. Yeah. I don't know how you got in. but you know, do your research about producing a book for print. Because I think anyone can make a comic now, but I think not enough people are informed. And it is, I mean, you will learn constantly from day one. You will, you know, even now I'm learning, you know, I know nothing about webcomics. I want to make webcomics because this goes beyond the print format. I want to do a webcomic. But before I do any of that, I'm going to research it for years. I'm going to steal everyone else's ideas and do it. Because that's the best way to do it. Because nothing's original, is it?
And that's the thing about the small press community is that... it's a welcoming community and a helpful community. And so if you have questions, don't be afraid to ask them, usually through a technology medium like Twitter or Facebook, because we don't like talking to real-life people mostly. Ain't that stuff. That's why I'm usually drunk at conventions, because I'm terrible at talking.
She's half cut now.
Yeah. talk to them, ask them questions through Twitter. People will be more than happy to help you with any questions you have. Or email these guys so they can mock you on the show.
Yeah, I think if you're going to make a comic, though, put it out there. You've got to put it out there to get a quality control around it all. I think that's not done enough. People, certainly in the London small press scene, will make a comic and then they'll go and sell it. Have friends, have people who have got an opinion or some form of opinion that you may not necessarily have to take any notice of. You know, I put a comic out and asked 10 people about it and 10 people have given me a different opinion. But it's worth putting out there because it might be that one thing you don't notice. Spell checking, for example. Oh. You can stare at a page 100 times and you won't notice something's spelled wrong. But if you give it to a friend, they'll notice it straight away. So please do send your book out, get it looked at by people, because otherwise people are going to go, oh, look, that's wrong, and you'll have printed 500 copies. Yeah, so it's very important.
I mean, real-life example, Mike Garley sent me Samurai/2 to proofread before he sent that to press. destroyed it with a red Sharpie, pretty much. There were so many mistakes because he'd been so involved in it from the beginning, and he was reading what he was expecting to see on the page and not what was actually there. So there were spelling mistakes in people's names, and there was your and your wrong in places. So, yeah, give it to someone who hasn't been involved with it, who's a fresh set of eyes to read. They will find mistakes.
I mean, we've talked a bit about like actual making comics, but why should people pick up Small Press comics? You know, and not everyone wants to make comics.
Well, so I'll pick up Small Press because they're good. That's the only reason I'll pick up Small Press. Same as I'll pick up Small Press.
What entices you to a Small Press book, though? What?
Yeah, it's interesting. Something I don't get any. So thank you. Something I don't get elsewhere, I suppose. But I will read a good comic. It's the same as anything, like I will listen to a good band or I will watch a good movie. I'm not really bothered whether it come out of Warner Brothers or some indie little film company. As long as it's good, you're going to pick it up. And I think that's what you've got to look at. Is it a good comic? If it is, yeah, make it. If it's not, you know, it's not going to get picked up, probably, unless you're one of these people who's got an incredible internet presence and can put a buzz out about a comic, I suppose.
Mm. What about you?
For me, you get a more diverse art style in indie press than you do in the mainstream press. You get a different type of colouring, and that might sound ridiculous, but the colours in a lot of small press books are more muted and softer, and I like that style of colouring. Mm. You get more women in small press, feminist sisters. You don't get a lot of women producing mainstream comics. So if you're interested in buying stuff produced by women, small press is where you can go, because there are loads of ladies out there producing amazing stuff.
But do you think, we're slightly going off topic now, but do you think that all of the independent and small press scene has such a huge wave of like female creators at the moment, and these female creators, you know, they will go on to like the bigger books,
I mean, this last week has proved that there's much bigger appetite for female creators, and the reaction to Mockingbird has shown that yes, there is that push, and the women in comics are going to come through small press and get picked up by the big two. So you're going to see a lot more in the big two, but it's taking time. And if you support them at small press, you will get it. If they see small press comics by women doing well, you'll see more of them in the mainstream.
Okay.
Blimey.
Yeah.
Should we ask the audience? What can you say after that? That was a drop the mic moment, really, wasn't it? You lovely people that have joined us here today. Half an hour. Do we have any audience questions? You can ask us anything. This is going to be interesting, isn't it, really?
This is a rare opportunity to ask these questions. Been shouting it more radios, more
than
if you have,
you
listen to the show. Anyone?
Two questions.
How important is it for you guys to forge a link with your sort of local comic book shop? Because I came in, as mentioned on an earlier panel, always
those guys are amazing.
And they just, every time I pick my collection up now, they swing in and they said, have a look, you don't like it, great, it's work, you know. So how important is that? Just, I don't get, the only times I sort of touch independent guys is either there or at places like this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a London-based creator, so I'm very lucky because I've got Orbital and Gosh, who are both based there, who are excellent, absolutely excellent. And I would suggest if anyone's got a comic, they go straight to those two places, really good. But I think, for me, I get all my indie comics from events like this, but I also get them from those shops, and I also have a standing order, which I'd recommend at any shop, really, and you get a discount. Definitely, build a relationship up with, Travelling Man, page 45, Gosh and Orbital, can we think of anyone else?
Raygun,
yeah, Raygun East just closed, but the Raygun Inn, Richmond's still open. So there are small, and they, whilst small press don't sell a huge amount at shops, what they do is they get events going. Gosh probably has one or two a week, and they get footfall into the shop. So it's definitely a good way. So the comic shop benefits by the footfall, and the small press creators benefit by getting their on shelves in genuine comic shops next to the Teen Titans, or where it is they're going to be sold next to. Definitely build a relationship. Most comic shops, will have a representative of their staff, if they're a reasonably big one, who deals just with small press. It's Carmela at Orbital, if you know her, she's superb. Mm. And she organises all the events.
Certainly some stores are more receptive to independent comics than others. I mean, the comic book store problem is a bigger thing anyway, because some stores like Page 45, etc., they're open to it, but you'll get stores that just want to sell Funko and Pops, and then yeah.
And comic shop owners, especially the guys who specialise in back issues, are like second-hand car salesmen. You know, they're proper dodgy. Do you know what I mean? They will have you right over. You know, the little granny walks in with the box full of back issues that are probably worth a couple of grand, and they'll give them 40 quid because they're doing her a favour. But yeah, you've got to get them on side. Go to a comic mart, and you'll soon see all that in London. But yeah, most of them will listen to you, and they'll probably sell.
I think it's growing. As the scene's growing, I think it's advantageous for them to be more open to it, isn't it, really?
What's Ian's shop in Aylesbury called? I'll give that a name check.
Dead
Universe in Aylesbury, another great shop for small press. Like a Target. Yeah.
Dead? Questions?
I think you had a question. Okay.
I see a lot of webcomics around lately. People giving stuff away for free to build their audience. Is that, what do you think about that?
I think webcomics are brilliant way of getting the book out, but that's not to say, you know, it's free for everything. That's not to say that people have made livings off webcomics as well. Well, especially with Kickstarter, you could have a webcomic that you've been doing for a couple of years, you go to Kickstarter, all of a sudden you've got a printed book in your hands. Webcomics are a brilliant place because you can experiment, you can try different things. I think some people are certainly more switched on. The idea of a webcomic is certainly enticing because it is free and you can just post it up and anyone can see it. And I think it really tests certainly the stamina of some people, because Dan Butcher, our missing co-host, he does a webcomic Vanguard, which he's been doing for how many years now?
Four or five years.
Yeah. And it's once a week, and he does it, you know, and he's got a full-time job. He's only just done one print collection. But webcomics are certainly... It's a huge wave, isn't it, really? I mean, certainly we like Tapastic.
It's a good way of practicing your scheduling as well. Yeah. So if you set yourself a schedule with webcomics that you're going to release a page or two pages a week, you have to stick to that because people will log onto your page to follow your webcomic. So it's a good way of getting into a rhythm of making sure, speeding up your work and getting regular pages out regularly.
I think you've got to take advantage of your webcomic. I think I spoke to a Dark Horse editor last year in New York, and he said, nobody will pick you up from a webcomic, is exactly what he said. He said, you won't get pro work from a webcomic. You will get pro work from printing that webcomic and selling it. So make advantage of your webcomic. It's okay, it's free and it's out there, but the big companies ain't going to look at it, probably, unless it's huge. What you got to do is you got to print it, and then that's your calling card, I think. To me, that's the best option. And a lot of people do that. You see it all the time now, with like I say, Dan's just done it. But you print your... You can do a Kickstarter to print it. That's quite common as well.
Dan's getting like thousands of views a week.
It's a good way of building a following and getting a fan base that will then help you promote your Kickstarter or help you promote your print run, because they want to see that. They want that. Nobody likes having just webcomics. You want that thing in your hand, tangible products. So people will help you promote your webcomic if you send it to print. So it's a good way of getting... promotion out there as well.
And let's face it, there's some old editors out there who go, I understand there's comics on the internet now. You know. So, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyone else? Oh, we've got one more. Oh.
Obviously, it's free when you're doing the web comics, but if you want to publish it, how much are you looking at publishing?
Well, I had a good chat with Rich on Tuesday. Okay. So, there are many factors that will decide how much your webcomic is going to, how much your comic's going to cost. Your page count, the size that you want it, the paperweight that you want, the cover that you want. So you can knock up a cheap copy and get 100 for 80 quid that you can sell for 20 pages with a self cover. But if you want something 130 pages with a heavier stock cover in full colour, you're looking at about £6 a copy.
Certainly, also with webcomics, you know, you can have it full colour. You can do whatever you want. You want to print that. There is a massive difference between printing colour and printing black and white, isn't there?
And the size is important. So a lot of people want to print in... this is all ages, Vincent.
It's him.
It's not. Size is important, despite these two giggling fools next to me. The difference in cost of a print run of a UK comic size comic and a US comic size comic is about 40% difference. So you go for the UK size, you'll save yourself about 40%, roughly, depending on your page count, paper stock and everything. So those are things to bear in mind. This is why when you go to print your comic, you can stop giggling at the back. You're terrible. When you go to print your comic, speak to someone like Rich at Comic Printing UK or one of the other, there are other not as superior comic printing.
He seems to be the go-to guy. We're open to get him on the podcast.
We are going to schedule it soon, actually. We're going to have a special episode all about printing comics.
But ask the questions. He's even got a quote thing on his website. So if you could just fill that in and send it off to him, and he'll send you a quote for your book. So don't be afraid to ask questions. No one is going to think less of you or think you're annoying them.
Have a look at a website like this, Curia Regis, which is a web strip. And what she's done is she's put it up on the web. She's printed it as single issues, and then she's kickstarted a trade of it all. So she's don't think that because it's on the website, people won't buy the physical issue. There doesn't really at the moment seem to be a correlation between the two. So because it's for free, nobody's going to buy your comic. People will buy the comic often because they like your web comic. And
well, it's the same with digital, doesn't it? Because I've got a lot of digital issues. I read most of my comics on Comixology weekly. But then if I like it, I'm going to collect the trade. I want that book on my shelf.
Yeah. And there's a problem with webcomics, isn't there, about you have to click back, don't you, to find that page you should have bookmarked and you never did. Where did I get to? Well, if you've got a book, you know where you're going to be when you're reading it, I think. And people like that. They really do. Yeah. Okay.
We're full of information today.
Thank you. I know.
I was thinking more about Emily.
I assumed you were talking about me.
Yeah. I think, obviously, if you want to know more, our little podcast, even though this is... this has gone...
Thanks, Matt. Thanks for coming in.
Matthew Harrower, who has become infamous on our show, even though he's never been a guest.
Matt Harrower, the Vampirella cosplayer.
Yeah.
He's wearing leather trousers as we speak.
I mean... Obviously, on our show, we've covered lots of different things about Small Press, whether it's been publishing, you know, writing comics, the artwork, web comics. We do cover everything because the reason that the show exists, because I make comics, but I want to learn more about other people because everyone's got a different experience, haven't they?
Hmm.
It's sort of, and so we want to get the information out there for people and also for people to discover new books because hopefully, all of you in here, will pick up. There's some beautiful prints out there, but hopefully you'll pick up at least one new book that you haven't.
Pick up the anthology as well.
Please pick up because that's for charity.
For charity, yeah. And it's got loads of different creators in there.
Yeah, and we're all in it.
That's not the reason. It's for charity, and there are loads of creators in there, so you might find someone that you like, and then you can go off and buy their other stuff.
Okay.
Yes. Now, shall we sign off?
Yeah, I think so.
But where can people find us?
Are we doing that bit, are we?
Yeah, we are. This may have been a car crash, but I'm going to sign it off.
You're driving us off that cliff.
Yeah. As we're going down, I've got the radio playing. It's like Thelma and Louise and Tony.
Am I Brad Pitt in this?
Yeah.
Which one of us is Thelma? That's a completely different show. Yeah. Where can people find us online if they want to know more?
I'm at EzoYes on Twitter or ilovescatjazz.co.uk on the web.
Yeah. Emily?
I'm corpsing. I'm at Tomboy Princess on Twitter. Find me there. That's where I am most of the time.
Now, can you see? I do a weekly podcast. You see what I have to put up with every week. You can find me online at Jester Diablo. Find out more about my comic, The Red Mask from Mars, at this very show because I'm selling it. And at the end,
I knew this was whole.
This is all just scheduled to be about me.
Your hair looks nice today.
Thanks. Yeah. No, but in all seriousness, the Awesome Comics podcast. Search for it. You can find it on iTunes. And we aim to entertain. Don't expect it to be serious. But at the same time, you will actually learn something. Like I have today, because I've learned something from you, Emily.
Yeah,
really?
I have, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. I've learned that I want you on the show more than I want him.
It's the only reason I'm here. Drop the knowledge box.
Yeah. So, thank you very much.
Thanks for coming along, everyone.
Thank you very much.
And what time's the next panel, Alex?
Half past two, and that is with the bigger
Roger Langridge, Mark Lane, and Christian Mark.
Well, wave, Christian, wave. Hi.
Yeah. Today we're going to talk about the pros in the comics industry. So taking that step beyond the small press up to the big publishers.
Yeah.
Yeah, who's Mark Lane?
Just some guy. Right, that
thanks
likes
a lot.
Thank you very much, guys. Wonderful.
Well, how was that?
It wasn't as bad as I remembered.
No, I don't think it is. We did have a lot of people tell us that it sounded all right and who liked
it. Yeah, people were laughing at it.
Yeah. No doubt a lot of people who listen to to that audio are probably laughing now thinking, how the hell?
Burks.
Yeah. So thanks to Emily Owen for being on that panel. And thank you very much to the Geek Force guys.
Brilliant. Love them to death. Really good this year, weren't they? Absolutely spot on. Yeah.
They are the men responsible for the recording of all the panels. They've also put a lot of the panels on YouTube. So
you can go and see them there.
Yeah, you can go.
And last year's brilliant 2000 AD panel, which we got you on.
Yes. I was properly prepared for that, wasn't I, Tony?
Yeah. Somebody dropped out. It was Clint Langley, I think, had dropped out. And I said, "Oh, have you ever read 2000 AD?"
I
read it years. I read it years. That was what you said. I read it years ago. Come and talk. I said, "Well, get on the fucking panel. The other two blokes are boring. So you had to come on."
I've watched that fucking panel. It's great.
Oh, no.
It's just you giggling at me.
Vince just doesn't know what's happening. How did this happen?
There's some bloke, I asked him a question, and he started going on about doing Bible comics. I got a bit confused.
Oh, God. Jesus.
Anyway,
it reminded me of that video, you know, the guy turns up for the job at the BBC, and he ends up like on the news.
He turns and they're going, they thought he was like an ambassador from somewhere in Africa or something. And he's going, he's like, no, it's a very nice bloke. He didn't want to say to them, I think he got the wrong person. He just kind of went along with it. Maybe he thinks that's how all news is prepared. We all pretend to be people. Yeah, I was a professor of psychology last week on BBC Four. You know, it's like that. Yeah. It's like the whole world is imagined. I like that idea.
What a nightmarish reality we live in.
Talking about nightmarish realities. Emily.
Sure, Emily will kill you.
Yes. So that was Nottingham Comic Con, the panels from there. Thought Bubble this year was a big deal. You kept seeing God knows
how many
people. Yeah, we missed it. We couldn't be there. Sorry to everyone. Well, I think everyone didn't need us. They had a perfectly lovely time.
They had fun without us.
They said it was really, from what I can see, it's blinding. Had a really good time.
A lot of people were posting a lot of pictures of some nice comic hauls, which is...
Yeah.
And their freebies.
Yeah. So
And some people didn't pay for anything.
Yes. As Dan Butcher says, a freebie from a small press person isn't a freebie, really, is it?
It's not, is it? Yeah, it's not. There's a huge print run, is there?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fiver out of their pocket, pretty much, isn't it?
Yeah. But that's talk for another time. Right now, our secret agent, Emily Owen, was an absolute star and got some interviews for us, unbeknownst to us. She just dropped some audio right in our laps and said, there you go, mother fudges.
Brilliant.
Yeah. They're wonderful interviews with some absolutely awesome creators.
I've not heard these yet, so I'm looking forward to hearing them.
Yes.
Yeah.
That we'll be probably talking more about in the future, actually. So some great ones. So let's not put it off anymore. The mighty Emily Owen giving you her very own Thought Bubble special. And so here you go.
So I'm here at Thought Bubble this weekend, and I thought, seeing as none of you guys have managed to make it, that I'd chat to a few people. So I've been wandering around, talking to some people. Hope you enjoy. I'm here with Sean Jefferson at Thought Bubble. This is your first time tabling, I believe.
Yeah, it was also my first time applying, and I'm so glad that I got in. It's such a beautiful convention and very, very well organised.
Absolutely, and a lot of great people here as well.
Yeah, the standard is incredibly high, which in some ways is quite intimidating, but in a lot of ways it's very inspiring and quite exciting to get to mix with lots of different artists, particularly, from being down south and in Wales. obviously we've got a really great community down there, but it's very nice to come up and meet a different group of artists. And
yeah, not just the same old people.
Yeah, it's kind of damn, right?
Yeah. I mean, those people.
Yeah, jeez.
And it is a great convention. You recharge your creative juices coming here, don't you?
Absolutely, and especially with it coming up to the end of the year. I mean, a lot of people I know have done a lot of conventions this year, and it's great to go out on a high note.
And so what have you got on offer this weekend?
This weekend I have the preview issue of my webcomic, which is first two chapters of the Book of Fae. It is available to read online, but we're hoping next year to get the first five chapters into the first volume, which should be nice and exciting. I've also got two volumes of The Adventures of Soosh, which is just random comics about stuff my cat gets up to. Yeah.
Everyone loves cat adventures.
I know, right? So that she's selling out quite quickly, actually, which I'm pleased about, but also I'm like, damn, I should have brought more. And also I'm sort of quietly promoting my project for next year, which is a fantasy-based comic called Overlords, which is, I mean, it's set in a fantasy setting, but the main theme is about, like, black and white thinking and how it's, like, important to have a healthy mindset and not sort of do one or the other. So it's kind of a personal topic for me, but a lot of people I know have issues with the same thing, I guess, so I'm really hoping to get that started next year.
That sounds really great. So what, have you any highlights from the weekend? What's been your
highlights? Wow, this is gonna sound really sad, but one of my highlights was that someone showed me to my table. That never happens. I got here and they were like, yes, here's your table and we will get you tea and if there's anything you need.
The guys here are great. They help you unload if you need help unloading. Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic. And I was a bit like, wow, because I mean, I've been to conventions before where they literally cross you off the list and they're like, go find your table. And you're like, I don't even know what city I'm in right now. So, but also just getting to speak to so many great artists face to face, because obviously we have online communities and you talk to people on there. But it is a bit sort of like, oh, message them back at some point. It's really nice to put a name to the art.
You also realise that everybody worries about the same things you worry about when you come to places like this.
Yes, it's very grounding, is the word. Because, yeah, I think a lot of artists work in isolation. You do end up worrying about things and thinking that's unique to you. And then when you actually talk to other people, they're like, oh, yeah, no, I do it all the time. And you're like, oh, thank God, I'm not weird.
You're definitely not weird. Yeah. Well, you are a little bit in a good way, but yeah.
Fun kind of weird.
Yeah, exactly. And so where can people find you online? That's the important bit.
That is the important bit. At the moment, probably the best place to find me would either be on Twitter. You can just type in Sian Jefferson. I'm pretty sure I'm the only one on there. Also, I'm on Tumblr at seanjefferson.tumblr.com. And if you're the kind of person who prefers DeviantArt, you can find me on there as well, seanjefferson.deviantart.com. I will say, though, if you're going to message me, please use DeviantArt or Twitter, because for some reason Tumblr's like, hey, you got a message 3 months ago.
Twitter's always great because it's immediate as well.
Yeah, very spontaneous, and it's nice to get like a flow of conversation going. So, yeah, definitely.
Thanks very much, and good luck with the rest of the day.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm with Robin. Introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Robin Holtzman, and I do the 18th century spy comic called Curia Regis.
I asked Robin to introduce herself because I've tried to pronounce her surname three times and I'm failing miserably.
It's like Ghostbusters, except with an extra letter.
Ah, and even more cool.
Yeah.
So, Curia Regis, how's it going? And tell me a little bit about it.
Oh, really well. I love Thought Bubble, and this is always my favourite show of the year. The comic is, as I said, an 18th century spy adventure drama. Sorry, I keep looking at your phone, which is a bit odd.
Everyone's been doing that. That's fine. It's more attractive than I am.
It's got lots of drama, lots of adventure, intrigue, full of expressive characters, lush backgrounds, fabulous architectural detailing, and a sense of dark foreboding. So says Forbidden Planet better than I can.
And those guys know what they're talking about. I hear it's a scandal, power and intrigue, an 18th century battle of wits.
Yes, Steve Morris from Comics Alliance very much agrees with you.
It's amazing how well I can read. And how's your weekend going?
Oh, wonderful. I couldn't be more happy, despite that they're shouting at us now.
I timed this wrong, haven't I? It adds to the ambiance.
Yes, this sounds... So if any of that applause was caught, it was for me.
Of course. And me.
Yeah.
Yes. For both of us, for being fabulous.
Of course.
I
forgot where we were up to.
I pitched the comic. That happened.
How's the weekend going? That was the question, yes. I think.
And I was really, really happy. Like, we've sold 2 boxes of books. I really can't complain at all.
Amazing.
I'm overjoyed. I've had excellent sales support this weekend as well, which has let me wander around.
You do have a delightful assistant.
I do. She's wonderful.
So what's your highlight been of the weekend?
I have been able to spend so much time talking to people this weekend, which I can't normally do. So I've been able to have a lot more conversations across the table and just find out what people like. They've come back after buying single issues and bought the book. It's amazing.
That's the best compliment.
I had someone come up to me with a napkin with my comic name on it and go, "I've been looking for you. Someone wrote this on a napkin. Can you sign the napkin?" And I went, "Yeah.
Sign anything."
Sure. "You're going to buy the book, right?" No. So he bought the book, but he also got me to sign a napkin, which was weirdly fun.
It's always a weird request at a convention, yeah. Always something. So what have you got next? What's in the works for you?
Well, we have just finished volume 1, so we're doing the Kickstarter fulfillment. I will go back to my flat, which smells of ink, and send out some books. Yeah. And then it is straight into volume 2.
That's going to keep you busy for a while then.
Yeah, but you know, I've sped up over the years as well. I'd like to be able to do a couple of short stories on the side, do something a little different, and I've already got my next book planned out for after the series is done.
Oh, fantastic. So, that's something to look forward to then.
Look forward to Lovecraftian police horror.
Well, we all do.
Don't
we? We all do, yeah. And where can people find you online?
My website is whatido.co.uk, which is very, very simple to remember. And if you want to get in touch, my email is robin@whatido.co.uk.
Fantastic. And can they buy the book on your website
as well? In about 24 hours, you can absolutely buy the book on my website.
Fantastic. Thanks very much, Robin.
Thanks.
Great
so
to meet
much.
You. I'm now with Rosie Hathaway. Hi, Rosie. How's it going for you today?
Hi. It's really good, thank you. It's been a bit quieter today than yesterday, but it's still really good. Just tired.
Fantastic. And what have you got on your table today?
So I'm selling my Kickstarter funded Nyala from earlier this year. I've also got my newest release, which is called Bull, which is a Danish letter, which I realise is really stupid to call your comic something that no one can pronounce. But you can just come and point at
it. But it's interesting.
It's interesting, and it's glittery, so that kind of helps.
Amazing glittery cover, which is fabulous.
Yeah, Claire's accessory, Glitter Hairspray, has worked wonders this weekend for my comics.
What's Boo about?
It's a short story. It's kind of it's a girl who finds a rock, and it turns out to be kind of like a magical little friend of hers. And it's just a kind of a short little kind of cute story. It reminds me of being young. I wrote it because when I was younger, my mum would always make things more lively than they actually were. And I'd also get like emotionally attached to random objects because of the imagination she gave me. So it's kind of that sort of thing just made into a little story.
Your mum sounds very cool.
She is cool. She is very cool.
And so what have you got coming up next? What are your future plans?
I think I'm hoping to try and maybe get something published with the Good Comics guys. At the moment, I'm feeling a massive kind of tired spell from doing a couple of different things. I edited Sneaky Business not like a month ago as well, so it's been quite hectic. So I want to read other people's stuff, sleep for quite a while, and then start planning next year for something new.
It's reading other people's stuff to help recharge your juices as well, doesn't it?
It really does. I packed quite a lot into this year. I graduated in summer, so it's kind of all caught up with me. I wanted to be just keep making stuff, but I need to sit back.
You need to take a
read
break.
What everyone else is doing and just lie down for about a week.
That sounds like a really good plan
doesn't
for me.
Doesn't it sound good?
Yeah.
That's next.
And where can people find you online?
I have a website, rosiehathaway.com. I'm also, you can get links from there to Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I'm pretty much everywhere.
That's great. Thanks very much, Rosie.
Thank you.
I'm here with Sarah Milman. Hi, Milmo.
Hi.
How's it going this weekend?
It's going really, really well. I'm having a really nice time. I'm launching like a new book this weekend, and it's going well, which makes me really chuffed.
Tell me about your new book.
It's called MPCT, and it's set in Cardiff. It's a tea shop that's run by orcs, elves, other fantasy creatures, and it's kind of like Final Fantasy meets Lord of the Rings, but modern day. So yeah,
that sounds pretty cool.
Thanks.
And so, what else have you got? I could see other books.
Yes, I've still got Heart of Time as well, Volume 1, and next year I'll be going back to Heart of Time and relaunching that and bringing out new issues. So I've got Volume 1 here today, and yeah, selling the two books. So
it's been a lot of fun.
Fantastic.
And so, what's been your highlight of the weekend?
Oh, that's difficult. It's all been really good. The party last night was pretty fun. The party was really good. Just everything. That's a pretty rubbish answer, isn't it? I've enjoyed everything.
Seeing everyone's really good, isn't it, as
yeah,
well?
Yeah.
And what's your plans for the future? What's your next step? Your
world
next project.
Domination.
Yeah. World domination.
Well, I'm going to continue on with these two projects. So I'm planning to get... So MPCT is going to be only in print, and I'm going to try and get an issue out every 3 months. And then for Heart of Time, I'm still going to release it as a webcomic and have it every week, and that begins in January. So next year is going to be crazy.
So starting in January, and where can people get hold of it?
So my website is www.heartoftime.co.uk. And I should be starting a Patreon just before Christmas as well. Or Patreon.
I say Patreon, but I don't suppose it matters which way.
It's a thing.
Yes, everyone knows what you mean.
It's a thing, yeah, and it's going to happen.
And if people want to get hold of you, what's the best place to get hold of you?
Twitter.
Yeah. Everyone says Twitter.
Yeah, I actually look at Twitter. I'm on a lot of other stuff, but it's more difficult to keep track of, but... Twitter is @heart_of_time, just to be annoying. But my picture is like myself as a Dago, so you can't really miss it. So there we go.
Adorable one as well.
Makes perfect sense.
Well, thanks very much, and I hope, well, there's not much left of the day, but I hope it's good for you.
Thank you.
Cheers. And with the chats from Good Comics, hi boys.
Hello.
Hi.
So, tell me about yourselves, first of all.
I'm Paddy Johnston. Sam and I founded Good Comics about a year ago, Thought Bubble. He's Sam.
And this is Sam.
Hello, I'm Sam.
So what was the idea behind founding Good Comics?
Well, it started as just a collaboration between the two of us as a way of kind of tabling together and putting our own work out there. But pretty quickly, we realised that we wanted to publish other people's work and to facilitate getting really good work into print that wasn't already out there. And just to sort of grow as a micro-publisher and get on the scene, really.
Yeah, it's sort of about finding some of those people that needed a little bit of a push to get their stuff into print and get their work out there and outside of the bubble that is, comics community and just, like, comics Twitter and things like that. It's about sort of expanding outside of that and trying to get a readership of UK indie comics that isn't just... other UK indie comics people.
You've got a load of great books on your table. What I'm going to ask each of you, what's your favourite book that's not your own one that you're selling this weekend?
My own one is my least favourite book on the table. It's the one that I'm the worst at selling because Pete or Paddy has to talk about it when people look at it. To be honest, at this point we've just published Robin Scott's Every Life I Ever Lived, Volume 1, and that's the big one for me.
It's amazing.
Yeah, that's been the one that kind of started a lot of what we're doing. It's a piece of work that I think it has to be in print, and I'm glad that it is, and I'm glad that we got to do it. And also, I'm pretty proud of like how it stands out and how it looks, and that it's on our table. It looks great, and people seem to really like it.
You should be proud of it. I keep telling Robin how proud I am of him getting out there because it's a great
book. Robin's not great at being told how proud I am. Everyone is of him, and we're not great at Robin telling us how appreciative he is that we've done it, but we all had a little cry yesterday, so we're fine now.
Not all together. It wasn't a group cry. It was different cries at different points throughout the day.
Separate cries. It's important.
So what's your favourite book?
Well, I would have to go with Robin's as well, but as that's already been mentioned, I'm going to say it's The Potato Hater, which is Pete Hindle's comic. Obviously, Pete is the third member of Good Comics, and he's taking his break now, so he's not going to get on the interview, but he's done a comic about how much he hates potatoes, which has proved to be quite a controversial thing. A lot of people have picked it up and gone, "You are an absolute monster," and then he's had to kind of talk him around, which actually has been quite a good sales technique for him. But yeah, it's a really, really enjoyable thing. He's good at throwing together sort of informative but acerbic nonfiction stuff, and it's been a pleasure to be able to push that kind of stuff, because it's very different to all the other stuff that we've got on the table as well. It really stands out for me, I think.
And what have you got coming up? I'm assuming you've got work in the pipeline.
We have work in the pipeline. The only one that's kind of officially definitely happening is that we are publishing the next book from Olivia Sullivan, who is one of our absolute favourite artists. We've got some of her books in stock with us as well. But her new book is amazing. We've seen about 3/4 of the pencils for it, and it looks brilliant. And she's like getting better and better as she goes, so we're really excited about that.
And she's our first distribution client as well, so we're trying to move into distribution as well very slowly. Like, we're looking at the UK scene and noticing that distribution is a bit of a problem or an unanswered question for people at this kind of level that we're representing. Like, getting their stuff into shops and into places where it's to be sold is a real challenge, so we're trying to think of the ways we can do that. But we've started out just by taking on Olivia's work to distribute, and she's going to publish her next book with us, so we're really excited about that.
All sounds great, and your table looks amazing.
Thank you.
Where can people in the internet world find you?
We're on Twitter at good_comics, on Tumblr at ourcomicsaregoods.tumblr.com,
and goodshops.bigcartel.com for all your shopping needs.
Thanks, boys. Have a good rest of the day.
Thank you very much.
Hi everyone, I'm here with Robin Williams-Scott, whose first book, Every Life I Ever Lived, has been released this weekend at Thought Bubble. Must be very exciting for you.
Yeah, it is. It's a really big deal for me. I've been drawing comics for years and years and years, and I never really thought it never occurred to me that anyone would have an interest in publishing them. And the guys from Good Comics have really been great about taking that on and doing all the hard work of turning my comics into a book. And it is exciting. It's lovely. It's really great.
It's been a big step from last year. You were giving out a zine is not the right word for it, but like a little sample of your work to people.
Yeah, I guess in the past, the closest I got was I got talked into printing off a load of A4 sheets and folding them up into little handmade A6 comics. And I could talk myself into doing that. The idea of a book with a spine was a different thing, though. And so this is the first year.
And it's a great book. I've had a quick flick through. I haven't obviously had a chance to read it yet. And it's definitely one that's worth buying. Alex Packnadol's introduction is amazing. How did you get him to write that for you?
So I have to give the credit to actually getting him to do it to Good Comics. I think they asked him, but Alex has always been one of the people who's really like championed my work and been really encouraging and really sort of pushed me in the right direction in terms of getting a book done. When he wrote the foreword, the guys from the publishers asked me if I wanted to read it, and I couldn't bring myself to read it until the book was published. And so I read it yesterday, and me and my partner sat reading it together and looked up at each other and had tears in our eyes. So Alex has done me all kinds of justice there. It's really lovely.
Yeah, it truly is, but worthy of that sort of praise as well. So what's next for you? Have you got any plans in the pipeline?
I don't know. I mean, the guys from Good Comics have already kind of talked about volume 2 of the book. There's the book collects the first 100 strips I've done. There are about 400 strips at this point. But I'm working on something different, a fictional narrative, which I've never done before, which is really different for me. So maybe something from that in the next couple of months you might start to see.
Oh, that sounds really good, actually. And you can't tell us anything more.
I don't mind that.
Oh, tell me more about it.
So it might well be a wrestling comic.
Okay.
I've been a wrestling fan for years, and I love this kind of weird crossover that wrestling and comics have, which, other than guys like Box Brown and the Andre book, I'm not sure has ever been really very well exploited. So I always thought there's a great opportunity to do a wrestling comic.
I think there's a lot of people out there that will love a wrestling comic as well.
Yeah, there are lots of people who are really like big wrestling fans that are comic fans too, and I think the two kind of naturally go hand in hand, so let's see.
And where can people find you in the world of the internet?
The best place to find me is on Twitter, so I have to remember. I think I'm Robin W. Scott on Twitter.
Yes.
And I post everything I do on there, so the Every Life I Ever Lived strips go on there every day, when I do them daily. And there'll always be sketches and drawings and stuff I'm working on there, so that's the best place to find me.
Thanks, Robin, and good luck with everything.
Thanks, Emily.
Well, wowza. She did another stormer, didn't she?
Yeah, that's thanks, Emily. We love you.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Emily. Cracking recordings.
I haven't heard them yet, but I'm saying they're brilliant.
From the shop floor of Thought Bubble. We're going to try and be there next year. If we're there next year, God, the roof's going to just blow off, isn't it? It's just going to, it's going to be crazy.
An explosion of sexiness.
Sexiness and like acid jazz.
We're not going to do that joke about pretending we're recording before the election. No,
no,
we're not going to do that one.
No, yeah, don't bum everyone out.
Oh, what?
Not like that.
Too late.
Is that geezer with the park? You parked up still there then?
Yeah, he keeps flashing. I think his trousers are falling down. They're a bit
really?
Loose.
Is he coming towards the car now? Is he actually approaching the car?
Mate, no.
Right.
Well, it's gone now.
Right. Tony is about to have his hands full in a few moments, so we're gonna leave you for tonight, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this extra special. You got two conventions in one special. We know how to treat you, don't we?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So from myself, Dan the Man Butcher, and Tony the Lady Esmond.
He's at my window now.
Stay tuned over the next couple of days for the next full-on Awesome Pod episode. It's gonna be a barnstormer. And until then, stay safe, stay awesome, and read comics. See you later, folks.
See you later.
Like you and Vince say stuff, and I was fucking listening to this. I don't know if I picked that up.
Yeah,
it makes you wonder what I'm missing in normal conversations.
It's had me questioning my whole life.
Yeah.
Do you take her to
when
be
I'm
your
pooping
wife?
Hard.
Pooping hard. Pooping hard. What the fuck did I just say then?
The thing is, that was good.
That was good.
The thing is,
yeah.
And you're listening, bumhole.
My bumhole never listens. It just always shouts. Anyway.
Shouting bumhole. That's the story. Let's do it. Listen, bum, there's the time and space. I better get going.
Yeah.
I love that's my favourite one.
I think we can leave Bumders of Time and Space.
Yeah.
It's just a reverential. Yeah.